Well, hello, Slingers. Thanks for tuning in to another Wordslinger podcast. And this one, we got a special one for you. I got a return guest, an echo from the past, if you will. Michael Evans, founder of Ream, also an author. And we're going to be talking about how storytellers rule the world. So stick around.
Wordslinger.
It's the Wordslinger podcast, where story matters. Build your brand. Write your book. Redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger.
Wordslinger.
This segment of the Wordslinger podcast is being brought to you by me. Now, if you'd like to support me and my work, this podcast, whatever else I'm doing, you can do that best by going and buying one of my books or a whole bunch of my books. Go to kevintomlinson.com/books, where you'll find an entire library of things waiting for you to discover. Go find your next new favorite read, and you'll be helping me out, which means I can continue to help you out. Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger. If you were expecting someone else, you're in the wrong place. Go find another podcast. But I appreciate you being here. Now, today I'm talking to Michael Evans, good friend of mine. He's the founder and CEO of Ream, one of the founders. He's a co-founder of Ream. If you haven't heard of Ream, we're going to talk a little bit about the service in this episode. We also talk about Michael's writing career, the fiction that he writes, and will be returning to writing. He's just a tad busy right now with the whole like graduating from Harvard and starting a successful startup business. So let's give him a little leeway. Coming up, I mean, you'll hear that interview. We're going to do a little bit of some three pieces of wisdom, three things toward the end. I don't have an Ask Kevin Anything this time. Sorry. But if you want to ask me questions, if you want to comment on the show or leave some suggestions or whatever, go to kevintomlinson.com/contact. We'll bring that up again at the end of the episode. But for now, stick around. Tune in. Listen in on this interview with Michael Evans. I'll see you on the other side. Well, this man is no stranger to the Wordslinger podcast. He's been on the show before, back in its previous iteration, its previous incarnation. And now, welcoming back Michael Evans. Michael, thanks for being back on the show, man.
Super excited to be back. It's been a long time, but hey, I mean, we've chatted between now and then, so I feel like we've had private podcast episodes, and now we just get to chat publicly. So,
I think the first time we talked, you were not yet. So you were an author at that time. You are currently, according to your very fancy bio, a science fiction thriller author, which we're going to talk about that, of dozens of novels.
If
you write one more, then it's dozens, right? But you're also the co-founder and CEO of Ream, and we are definitely going to talk about that because that's a new development since the last time we spoke on a podcast together. Although I think didn't I have you on as a guest to talk about Ream on the Self-Publishing Insider show with Draft to Digital? When I was doing that, I feel like I have.
Maybe.
We'll say we did.
On Mark's podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Podcast, I think.
I'm pretty sure. I'm like 99.8% sure. So take that. But either way, man, we're going to talk about that too. So, and also to congratulate you, because in just a couple of weeks from now, you will be a proud graduate of a little university we like to call Harvard. That is quite an accomplishment, sir.
Thank you. I'm excited to kind of be turning the page to the next chapter. Yeah. Great time here, but like right now as we're recording, I know you're in Texas, unless you're okay. I'm like, yeah, you're still there. Yep. And it is really, really cold out right now. It's raining, but like almost the verge of snowing. So I think, you know, it's maybe the land is saying goodbye to me, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Farewell. Farewell. Are you still thinking about moving to the Austin area after you're done?
I definitely will be spending the summer in Charleston, South Carolina. That's where my family's from. I think after that, I like to. I know what I'm going to be working on. I'll be working on Ream. I don't know exactly what it'll be, but that's I like to keep it open.
All right. Good. All right. We will welcome you here if you show up. And it was good to see you. You were here not too long ago, and we got to hang out, so that was good. There's a big growing author presence in Austin. That's the thing. Like, a lot of us here.
There really is. And then when you count Dallas too, Dallas is not too far. It and then too, it's like Texas has a lot of a really awesome author community.
All right, so the first thing I want to talk about, man, is something I think you don't get to talk about as much these days because everything else overshadows it. But let's talk about your writing. Let's talk about your dozens, forthcoming dozens of books. You're a sci-fi writer, sci-fi thriller. That's what I want to talk about first. Like, what makes a book a science fiction thriller, man?
That's a great question. I think for me, it's there's two ways that I'd categorize like the books I write, and why we kind of define them more as thrillers versus or sci-fi thrillers versus like just being one or the other. First is that I don't write science fiction set in far off futures. It's mostly 10 to 20 years out. And a lot of the actual plot lines of the book revolve around specific crimes that are taking place or conspiracies of that nature. So I low key was like writing books about like technology startups gone wrong. That's like what I was. So it's kind of funny to now be doing what I'm doing now, but it kind of always had that thriller, crime, conspiracy thriller aspect to it, but not like police procedural at all, like not even close. Much more along the lines of I'm sure A.G. Riddle. He's great author, one of my favorite, which I said that at a conference the other day, and they're like, I know A.G. Riddle. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I love to meet him, but we're not doing this, not stepping over that line. I'll fanboy in my corner. But I guess that would be the zone I describe my work in.
He is one of the people I at various times I've had conversations with him where I was hopefully going to get him on the show, and something always went wrong. So he's y yet to appear on the Word Slinger podcast. So see, you've already got one up on AJ Riddle.
Well, maybe I will do a call to action if you're listening, A.G. Riddle, you should be the next guest.
If you're listening, I will say this too. My personal story about him. So Nick Thacker and I used to do a show together called Self-Publishing Answers, and we had a whole joking conversation when I was first getting into writing thriller novels. We had a joke that I should write that one of us, and it ended up being me, should write a thriller novel called The Atlantis Riddle to capitalize on that guy's name and work. So I did. I have my second book in my Kotler series is called The Atlantis Riddle, and I did have a couple of people ask me if that's why I did
It's
it.
hilarious. I didn't realize that was the connection. That's awesome.
Now, did that help me? No, not at all. It didn't help a thing, but it's a fun
You can work for
story.
Bella Forrest and Gender Game. That seemed to be a decent
Gender
strategy.
Game was that is a kind of a brilliant thing. There's a little bit, I don't know. When I first started writing thrillers, that was my whole approach for titles was I was going to try to make everything, well, I was not just titles. With the series, I was trying to connect it to authors by, the main characters' names were all authors. I accidentally, I swear to you, I named a character Roland Denzel before I'd ever met Roland. And now Roland and I are very good buds, and
Great.
I'm just going to tell everybody that character was named for him. But it originally I didn't have a clue. I must have heard his name somewhere. That's the only thing we can figure. I must have heard it, and it just clicked for me. So are you still writing? Are you still writing books? Because
I'm not right at this moment. I've been writing some nonfiction for authors, some essays. I really want to get back into fiction. It's my one of my goals now that school's ending to like be able to do more of that maybe over the next couple of years. But what's funny about where my life has turned into is it feels like I'm somewhat living a science fiction thriller novel, and I actually quite enjoy that. And I think myself actually I loved the books that I wrote, but they were a little bit darker in the sense that it was like always about like conflict related to technology. I mean, that was what kind of made the science fiction setting of the story. And as much as like I am deeply concerned with like just in general like the world at times, I also like I've definitely shifted towards being more optimistic, which is maybe funny because the world's turned more pessimistic in that same time span. But I think maybe I just like to go against the grain. But I also think that seeing that some of these things that I wrote about, and I think a lot of us who are writing dystopian apocalyptic themes feel the same way. It's like a lot of the stuff we were writing about either came true or like even worse things happened. And it's like, I feel like the warning, like the reason I was writing the stories I was writing to warn people, like, oh, there's things to look out for. Like, we all know that now. And now I'm like, wait, I want to give us something to hope for. And I think that at some point that mindset will find its way into the lens of a fiction story again. But right now that's not the story I'm creating right now, and I'm still quite fulfilled.
I think the problem is though, once you've got that bug, Michael, you can't leave the world behind. You have to come back and write at some point. So that's your
Yeah, I don't know.
future. I'm letting you know your future.
Of course. No, I think it'll be a different themes, if that makes sense. When I but it's yeah, you're never gonna the passion for storytelling never goes away.
That's true. And you've made that actually kind of a theme of the work you're doing with Ream, right? Storytellers rule the world. That's like your tagline, I don't know,
Yeah,
your slogan.
that's kind of what started it all. There was this great book I was reading called The Story Paradox by Jonathan Gottschall. It was kind of like during this period where I was really battling with like, okay, these are the kind of stories I wrote after like between like Ream and the last time I came on the Word Slinger. I had published all those books, burned out like so many authors have, then did like a whole wild YouTube adventure, and really had to come to terms with like the idea of what it takes to make a living as a creator, what my soul actually wants to create, like what I'm driven to, like from an artistic standpoint, want to produce, and kind of mirroring that with like a business model and ecosystem that felt a little broken. And I just started reading because that's how I cope, either reading or writing. And I think I was a little like, the writing's hard, but let me just read, right? And when I found this book, it was had a really interesting subtitle. It was like how storytelling like builds civilization, but is like threatening to destroy it. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. I want to learn more about this. And when I was reading the book, the first chapter used four words in a sequence that I'd never seen before. And it was Storytellers of the World. And I was like, whoa, that's like, and just like the chapter title alone hits you. And then reading the chapter and reading the book, I had this very interesting takeaway from it, which is that one, like obviously storytellers of the world, but that in itself doesn't actually mean anything. Like, who are the people telling the stories? Who are the storytellers? And, if we go back thousands and thousands of years, the storytellers were just like people. In like small tribes that we lived in as humans, small local communities. And not to say that there was a perfect world. Okay, there was a lot wrong with that world in terms of who could become a storyteller. And I'm not even going to get into that. But we had a huge shift with mass media, where all of a sudden global storytelling, the mic is, has these new kinds of gatekeepers. And now we're seeing that shift almost completely back in the other way. But there's dangers to that. And especially when arguably the storytellers, although the story creators are, indie authors, all the people listening to this podcast, arguably in the current context, the real storytellers are the big tech platforms who actually control the data, who actually control the relationship, who are actually like ruling the world. So you have to think about, is that the kind of world we want to live in? Like where those people are the storytellers. And I kind of decided, no, I don't want to live in that kind of world. I want to create a future where like storytellers are the world, they always will, but those storytellers are you and me, and we get to have more power of our career. We get to be able to actually take control of our audience and of our publishing business. So that's kind of what inspired everything. And we didn't use that those four words too much in the beginning because it was just like the intellectual inspiration and like kind of like the spirit of it all, but it isn't actually like what we're doing in the sense of like storytellers of the world doesn't really tell you much about like the product. So it was kind of like, what is this? But when I started saying that, people started really like grabbing onto it. And I was like, you know what? We're just going to start saying it more because the more we say it, the more people seem to believe it. And that is a really cool thing to have people actually recognize because I feel like for so long we are told that we don't rule the world, that you shouldn't be a storyteller, you shouldn't be an artist growing up. And although I've had a lot of lucky and weird turns in my life, if there's anything that I've done, it's just like pursued the path of my passion, even when it didn't make sense. And I'm pretty happy 7 years in with where my life's at. And I think for anyone else who goes all in on something for 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, it's probably going to get you somewhere. Might not be where you thought you were going to be, but somewhere that you're very happy with.
Frequently not where you thought you were going to be, frankly. Like I did not picture, well, ironically, I'm oddly back where I started in a lot of ways in my career. Back in front of this microphone, same moniker, I'm still the word slinger. I'm back to full-time creating again, so I did get a little bit of a loop back, I guess. Now that I think about it.
Well, the Mayans and the Aztecs would say that time is circular, right? So linear time, somewhat of a function of the mind. In reality, maybe you're exactly living the life that you should be.
Maybe I should. Maybe that's it. That's a good way to look at it. If you find yourself looping back to a point, something similar to where you were before in your life, maybe that's a sign that that's the path you're meant to be on. We'll call it that. So, what you've built, by the way, I want to talk about Ream. You're a co-founder of Ream, so we want to dive into that a little bit. What is let's break it down into easy language for folks. What is Ream and what is it? Why does that matter to authors?
Yeah. So Ream is a place where readers pay authors monthly to get access to stories, could be stories in ebook format, could be signed physical books. Audiobooks are coming out on the platform in the next 6 weeks. And that is the really simple gist. That's what happens at Ream. So when I say that, people go, is it kind of like Patreon? And the answer is, yeah, it's similar to Patreon, but specifically for fiction authors. So what that means is that on the back end, it makes managing your Ream really, really simple, saves you a ton of time. Readers are able to comment inside of the stories. We call it like a social e-reader. So it helps you build a community of your fans and also makes it a much more streamlined and better experience for readers. And then at the same time in the site, we're also continually finding new ways to help authors not only like have a subscription with their existing readers, but also grow their fan base. So those are the kind of cores of Ream. Very simply.
So is and is it is the idea primarily about serialized fiction, or can you use Ream for other, like full novels and things like that?
We see all different types of authors succeeding on Ream. Elena Johnson is not an author who traditionally writes serials and actually isn't really writing serials on Ream either, but is an author who's done quite well on the platform. We have David Vergutz, who I think we met together
I just had
at
lunch with him like 2 days ago.
really okay. He's such a good dude. I love David. David's a horror author on the platform, and he's not writing serials. At the same time, there are a lot of authors writing serials. Ream is agnostic when it comes to both genre and when it comes to format. And we're actually actively trying to expand the formats, whether it's audio, et cetera, because storytellers ruling the world is great, and like it's what we want to do. We want to help you build your own mini Disney, your own mini world. But with that, there's lots of different ways that authors can see that. With that said, the most popular kind of thing on Ream right now probably would be serial fiction. Just looking at the data, I'd say a little bit over half of our authors are actively publishing serial fiction. Probably at 60-ish% of the revenue on the platform is attributed to a serial fiction author, which is skewed when it comes to the broader market. As 60% of revenue in publishing is not coming from serial fiction. It's quite a bit smaller than that. But with that said, the reason that for that is because Amelia Rose, who is a co-founder of Ream with me, she's a serial fiction author. She also publishes in retailers too. But she started off with serial fiction. And as much as Amazon and some of the retailers can be problematic at times, and like totally support authors looking for other monetization options and looking for other solutions. And a lot of authors will look for something like Green. The serial fiction platforms are remarkably worse. They really do take advantage of authors, or a lot of them have any monetization options, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. They're just more free reading platforms. So those authors are just in more dire need of something like Ream. So more of them have moved and set up and grown on Ream faster because they literally have just been the first people to join. But that's kind of what you'd see in anything, the first people to join something, the first people to grab onto it. And we're very grateful for our serial fiction authors and readers. And I think there's an ecosystem in which all of it can kind of live together. Because whether you're writing serials, whether you're writing novels, whether you're creating audiobooks, all of it at the end of the day is a story that's connecting with the reader.
That's a very good, and that is that's a strength for sure. I literally the episode of Wordslinger podcast that I produced today was that exact theme, that story. The title of this one is Story Builds Brand Loyalty or something like that. And I the story that I relate in that is that like I become very brand loyal to something when I learn the story of it. And the example I gave was there's a restaurant chain called Chicken Salad Chick. Are you familiar with this restaurant? Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've seen it, but I don't know the story.
So I watched or I listened to Guy Raz has a podcast on NPR called How I Made This, and he interviews the founders of different businesses. He interviewed the founder of Chicken Salad Chick. I'm not going to go into details of her story or anything because I don't quite remember everything. It's been a while, but I became a fan of that chain because I heard her story and how she founded it. And I happen to be someone who deeply loves good chicken salad. I'm on a quest to find the perfect chicken salad sandwich. I know that's a, that's a lowly quest, but that's mine. And they don't have any of these restaurants here in Austin, by the way. There's the closest one is in Waco, but my wife and I went to San Antonio yesterday and went to the San Antonio Zoo and we had lunch at a chicken salad chick. So I brought all that up to say, like, I became very loyal to that brand, and I'm very loyal to many other brands because they leverage story or because I learned the story, even if they didn't intend for it to be that. So that's a powerful thing, I think, for anybody, any entrepreneur. That's what you're doing with that Storytellers Rule the World line. Because you're already got this established thing. This only works if you've got it established, built, and ready to go. You got lots of support material to explain what this thing is. But you put that line out there and it's intriguing and it grabs attention and it draws people to you. That's what you're doing. I don't know if you intended to do that. That's what's happening right now. Did you intend to do
I mean,
that?
I think we're currently like evolving the brand to focus more on that. And yeah, I think there's actually a really good book that I'd recommend to anyone. Just like I think regardless of what you do in your career, but especially all of us being authors, it's called Stories That Stick. It's very good.
Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
great book.
So you've read it. Yeah. And I think like, one of the disconnects that I had when I was like really focused on self-publishing, that I've now tried to like marry that in, running Ream is that storytelling, we like to kind of think there's the business hat and then there's like the writing hat. And I do think that there's obviously a difference between both. There's certainly a difference in tasks. Like I can tell you it's not as fun like checking like an ads dashboard as it is like writing the next story, like fully with you on that. But at the same time, the actual thing that's going to help your marketing and going to actually build your brand and get you discoveries, like you're saying, it's your ability to tell a story. It's your ability to connect with people and be story first. And I think that in what Reem's done is I kind of view us as kind of like a big creator storyteller business. And although every tactic we use can't be one-to-one mapped onto things that can help fiction authors, I am like deliberately and literally trying to learn like how do we run like this business as if we're almost thinking like an author, like whether it's like literally bootstrapping it, whether it's the stories that we're creating and how we're approaching it, how we're building community, because it helps us help our authors more. And frankly, like all we've ever really wanted to be is authors. So it's quite fun still interface in that way.
It's a community for sure that I have spent a lot of time working with, talking with, community of dreamers who are also business savvy, you know. How often do you see that? Like, you don't really see that necessarily. I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, but like in the sort of, artist community, people who do oil painting or something, you don't get a lot of
Yeah.
that. Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I think it's interesting because I think it's like it's shifting because I think people are now realizing. I mean, like 50 years ago, what did it mean to be a business savvy creative? I mean, I guess James Patterson's like a really good example of someone who like understood the game, the business of it. But okay, that's like a really big outlier. Beforehand, it was kind of like this idea that these other people, the gatekeepers, will handle the business for us. And we'll do. But now that it doesn't have to be that way, it's like, well, we can do the business. We can do it even better than them. And it's also quite fun. And I think that increasingly, like the people who are creating art now, how many people are like creating art, but they're doing it on TikTok and have a million followers? Like that, like the new breed of what being an artist is. And there's always like an interesting thought experiment. Like if Leonardo da Vinci was alive today, like would he be creating on TikTok? I think the answer is like probably. Like he'd probably be doing something similar to like what we're doing now. Not at all trying to compare myself or you to Leonardo da Vinci. We are a few pegs down
Feel
from that.
free. No, feel free to compare me to Leonardo. Feel free.
Michelangelo, Leonardo, we're right up there. They would be in our career path. But I really do believe
500 years from now, they're going to be writing, biographies and doing movies, about Michael Evans, Kevin Townsend.
I do think they will be doing it about this era of history, and I think it'll be called very simply the Second Renaissance. And it's exciting to be alive during this time when this is actually the era we're living in.
I have been referring to it as the artisan age in a lot of the stuff that, which is very close to calling it the second Renaissance, because what we've got going on is exactly the sort of thing you've been talking about. It's people fear things like AI. It's going to take our jobs, or who would have predicted the future where AI is doing all the creative work and we're all having to work our butts off or whatever. I know that for some it has looked like that, but it's actually the exact opposite of that. Like, AI isn't taking over creative work. It's actually it's a newer, better tool for us to use and leverage to do more and better creative work. That's my standpoint. What do you think of that? This isn't an AI podcast, but since we're here.
Yeah, no. It's a great question. I mean, one note is that Ream being a platform that isn't building any sort of like artificial intelligence tool, we tend to not take a huge stance on it either way, just because it is a hot button topic, and I, really do respect where people come from, the emotions on either side. But in my personal view, I think that AI is actually largely a very good thing for creative people. And it, at the moment, It's like being a creative person who's running your own publishing company is kind of like doing three or four jobs. And not everyone can afford to hire three or four people to do those jobs, but you may be able to afford to do it yourself or having some software or program assist you. And this might feel like, I understand the fear of like, well, wait, like what's going to happen to like all the people who would have been hiring people? But the answer is that a lot of the people who are creating now would didn't have the capital and weren't, hiring these things out to begin with. So it's actually letting people create more and better stories and marketing, especially the marketing end of things, the branding, the business side of things. So I think it can actually be a superpower. But I understand the fearful side of things. And I will say, like, I sit somewhere where I see a lot of optimism. I have a lot of hope for the future, but I recognize it's going to be a rocky transition because, one, there are people in this industry who are going to be changing their skill sets, changing what they're doing. Like, there's a lot of opportunity, but no doubt that's a struggle. But then, of course, there's this idea of like, well, I don't think anyone loves the idea of like our stories being trained on and potentially profited off by someone else who's creating generative AI with it without having any sort of due course in action. I think that's an uncomfortable idea. I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be worked out, especially when it's like, oh, like, what if it's some crazy big tech platform who's going to start generating endless content? I have some reservations about that being effective. Certainly isn't effective today, in terms of the quality of what can be produced with human plus any sort of machine. But no one's to say that in 5 years that might not be the case. Like the fear that maybe that's the case, I understand. So for me, I just kind of view it like, well, look, if you are in power as an author, if you're taking control of your career, however you decide to use these tools, I support. And I think could be great. But I don't support, big companies, governments, all these other entities using these tools to suppress individual creative people. And I think that sadly, we're probably going to live in a world in which a little bit of both is true. And I don't think that's better or worse. And I think that we just have to take the opportunity that we have and make use of it. So that's like my take on it. I think it's a net positive for some, net negative for others. I think it's a good thing for a lot of us authors, but we have reason to be wary.
I'll make my final point on it, and then we'll put a pin in that and talk. We can talk about it some other time. But my stance on AI as a tool is it sh we shouldn't we as creators shouldn't be using it to create. We should be using it to augment what we create. It should be a support tool. And I think if we stick to that as a rule, now I do get the controversy of training on people's writing. I happen to be one of the authors. Everybody gets mad at me, but I actually don't see a problem with that. It's not plagiarism unless they're actually using your literal words, and you otherwise you're not getting any. There's no worse than a bunch of people reading your books to learn how to write. Human beings, that's the way we learn. That's my stance. People can, for anybody listening or watching this on YouTube, I am open to you, castigating me and tell me how
I
wrong I
think
am in
no, it's
the
awesome that you're sharing your stance because regardless of what your stance is, I think it would be really dystopian to say there's only one right way to look at
Right.
anything. And it's important that like everyone shares their views. And ultimately, I think as a collective of authors and writers, we all want a world in which things are better for each other. And there's a world in which we can work together to do that. And I think that's like the one thing going forward. I hope we all continue to remember that we're on the same team.
We are all on the same team. And what's great is when we discover not only star players, but people who are willing to kind of coach from the sidelines to help us all in this dream. And that is certainly you, Michael. I am a Michael Evans admirer. I love what you're doing with Ream. I was a fan of you when you were just writing fiction, lowly fiction writer.
Yeah. No,
And
the story tells of the world. No, they're not lowly, not lowly. I
So
was not ruling the world. I was like
you are
depressed,
out.
struggling.
Yes, that's
Regardless, I
exactly
was
right.
having fun. I just was, I was being I was the one struggling. And that's why I wanted to try and help.
Right. Yeah, you did what a lot of us do. You, as someone who's seen the struggle and felt the struggle, you decided to build something to help with the struggle. So
You have
good for
great
you.
experience. Also.
Yeah. All right, man. So we're gonna go ahead and wrap up, but you've got a couple of website URLs that you can send folks to learn more about you and learn more about Reem. You want to tell us what those are real quick?
Yeah, sure. The best place to learn more about Reem would be reemstories.com. That's REAM. Kind of like dream, but take the D off. And then in terms of where you can find, we have a podcast as well. We have a Facebook group. We're rebranding right now. So if you go to subscriptionsforauthors.com, that's a great website. That's where the home is now. And then depending if you listen in the future, it'll probably be storytellerswiththeworld.com. But if you go to subscriptionsforauthors.com, it'll take you to the right place. So for now, we'll just say subscriptionsforauthors.com and it'll take you to the right place.
Excellent. All right, my friend. Thank you for being a part of the Wordslinger podcast yet again. I'm glad to have you
Honor.
back on.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. This was
You
fun.
got it. All right, everybody. Make sure you go and check out those websites. That's reamstories.com. I did not memorize the rest of the Facebook stuff, but I do want you to go check out mevansinked.com because that's where you're going to find all of Michael's books. And you definitely want to go check those out. We want to encourage him to get back into writing. So, because he was not lowly, he was mighty. So, thanks a lot, everybody. Well, I love chatting with Michael. He was actually here. Wasn't visiting me per se, but we did get a chance to hang out here in Austin a few months ago. It was right around the time, actually, that I had announced and was just stepping into my role as CEO of BookSweeps. And maybe someday, maybe in the near future, if someone wants to know a little bit more about why I had a brilliant 4 month career as CEO of a author marketing company, feel free to ask. I'm happy to talk about that. It's all positive, all good. I think it's all for the best that we all kind of parted ways. Not in some negative way. It was just best for me, best for the company, and best for the authors we serve. It just, we'll go into more detail about that in another episode. But for now, I hope you got something, inspirational and useful out of that chat with Michael. I'm just impressed with that guy. The whole Harvard thing is impressive enough. A whole startup is impressive enough. But I mean, at his age, I'm trying to think of what I was doing and whether or not I was worthless. And I probably was. I probably wasn't committing much to the world. I don't know. I was in radio and TV at that time, so maybe I was doing more than I think. But I mean, that's a good point. I mean, sometimes we're kind of down on ourselves. I know I can be pretty down on myself. And I look back at my past and say, I should have done that or this or whatever. I should have done things better, should have done more. But I guess the reality is that our lives are a little more complicated than that. There's more shades than just black and white or even gray in our lives. So chances are, even if you are a little down on yourselves for your accomplishments or lack thereof, you've probably done more than you think. I need to keep that in mind. In fact, it's one of the things. It's kind of going to factor into our three things today. I wrote three pieces of wisdom this morning that are all about empathy and community. So let's dive into those real quick. So number one, wisdom starts with knowing that what you feel, others also feel. That's basic, right? We know what things feel like. We know what sadness and grief and we know what happiness, we know what all these things feel like. If we're feeling pain, if we're feeling suffering, then we know that others are probably feeling it too. I mean, it's not a given, but we know that pain and suffering is something others can feel. So empathy is about identifying with that and realizing that sometimes people say things and do things coming from that place of pain. So maybe we cut them a little slack, just like we would want them to cut us some slack. That's what empathy is. If we're going to be part of a larger global community, then empathy is going to have to play a vital role in our lives. that realization that we are individuals, but also part of a whole, is important, very important. And if we can embrace that and we can behave in that way with that thought as we interact with other people, then we'll create a better world. Number two, evil wants us divided, isolated, and alone. That's how you can recognize it. This really struck a chord for me because, you know, evil is something that it's been sort of defined in terms of like light and dark. And, you know, there's all kinds of, there's all kinds of illustrations of evil throughout history. But if you really look at it, if you deep dive into what evil is, it's division. I mean, it's whatever causes us to say there's us and then there's other. You know, whatever creates within us, I mean, there's bigotry and hatred, that sort of thing, racism, misogyny, there's all those things, they exist. But the reality of it is, like, those things are just symptoms of the evil, not the evil itself. I mean, they are evil things. But the real evil is in this spirit of division that comes over all of us, right? When we look at the world in a lens that only lets us see, us and them, there's always going to be that divide. Borders and races and, religions and all these things all can contribute to that division. So on the flip side of that, if you want to see what good is, if you want a definition of good, it's whatever brings us together. And I mean, all of us. So like, you can have a crowd of people that bring you together that can be evil because the purpose of that crowd is division. Look at something like the KKK, you know, or Nazis, to go to some extremes. You know, they were brought together. They were unified. But it wasn't good because the purpose of the unification was to go out and create that other and then persecute that other, to create division, to break us apart. So if you are looking for a litmus test for good and evil in the world, those are the things you should look for. Is it bringing us together or is it dividing us apart? Good rule of thumb. And number three, give others the help, the love, and the kindness that you need most. What we give returns to us. And this comes right back to that idea of all of us are one. The human being that Wayne Dyer describes if you believe it, you will see it. Great book. That idea that we're all just one organism that occupies the universe. We're one cell, really, of a vast infinity. And so we should be behaving like that. If we think of it in terms of like everything that goes out from us will come back to us, then we start to treat people better, right? Because if I'm nasty to you, then that's going to come back to me, right? I'm just harming myself. If I'm good to you, then that will come back to me. And that's what we all want. Treat others as you want to be treated, the golden rule. I look at the whole world through the lens of my Christian faith. I'm a believer in the idea of law of attraction. And I always feel like I have to caveat that, like, by saying, you know, yeah, I believe in law of attraction, but not the woo-woo law of attraction. But maybe I shouldn't try to caveat it. But here's the thing. I'm very practical about my view of law of attraction because my whole thing is thoughts literally are things. Thoughts do become things, and I can prove it. So as a writer, this is my living. I have a thought. I put it on the page. That page can be printed and become a physical thing that I hold in my hand. It can be an ebook, an audio book. It is a thing. It exists in the world and it started up here. And so that's proof. Artists are the same way. Podcasters. This podcast is thoughts becoming things like as you're hearing it. You're getting to witness the law of attraction, or at least a component of the law of attraction happening in real time. I also think it's interesting to me that, you know, writing and broadcasting like this are a form of telepathy, because, you know, the thoughts are in my head, and then through this medium of podcasting or the page, they're in your head. It's pretty profound. But the idea for me of law of attraction is that since we know that our thoughts do become things, they become our thoughts, become our words, our actions. They resonate out from us and create our immediate reality, at least in our immediate environment. They create the attitudes that we have. They create the interactions we have. Since that is true, since we know that is true, we should be very conscious of our thoughts. We should make every effort to control what we're thinking, to be positive, and to be purposeful, and to use our thoughts in a way that grows the organism of the human race, the human being, this cell that we are in the universe. And there's nothing woo-woo about any of that. That's all very practical stuff. If you approach your job or your relationships or, you know, whatever, anything, your hobbies, anything, whatever it is you're doing, if you approach it from the perspective and through the lens of it all starts with my thoughts, you want your starting place to be the best possible starting place. So that means cleaning up the way you think and making sure that everything you say and do is a reflection of the best possible version of your thinking. Does that make any sense? I think that makes sense. So anyway, that was three pieces of wisdom for today. And I hope something in that was inspiring to you. And I hope you take that out. Take it away from the Wordslinger podcast. Go out in the world and make that a positive impact on the world. That means that the work I'm doing can have some profound, maybe good impact on the universe. And it means that you are doing the same. Let's partner up and make the world better. One good, pure, clean, positive thought at a time. And that's it. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. We're going to have more interviews. I got some things. I got some scheduled. They're kind of spaced out, but we should be able to get a few of these knocked out over the next few weeks. Interviews are going to be a continuing important part of the Wordslinger podcast. But as you can tell, I hope you can tell, I've been working on just sort of refining the format. The old days were great. I love that I did all those interviews. I want to do more interviews. I want to talk to more writers and more entrepreneurs and more influential thinkers for this show, so that I can deliver something that will just profoundly impact you. That's what I'm aiming for. But you can help me with that. So first of all, make sure that you are, if you're on YouTube, go and please, if you're not on YouTube, if you're not following me on YouTube, go over to my YouTube channel and subscribe. Hit subscribe, hit like. You can hit the little bell if you want. I never hit the bell. Maybe I should, but that's bad practice, right? I should do as I want you to do. So go hit the bell. But make sure you also not just subscribe, but share the show. And very important on YouTube, leave a comment. And here's what you can do. This will help. And maybe I'll start asking some like open-ended questions in the future. But for now, if you have a question for me, because this episode didn't have an Ask Kevin Anything because I hadn't gotten any questions in the past week. But if you have a question for me about anything, it doesn't matter what it is. You can ask about writing, sure. Marketing, fine. But if you have questions about, you know, why is the grass green? Why is the sky blue? I'll answer those. I'll give you some answers. They may be kind of smart alecky sometimes, but I will answer. And ask me about history. Ask me about archaeology. Ask me about quantum physics. Ask me about anything you want, because what I'll do is I'll try to make an effort to research that. I can't promise to answer every question that comes my way, if this becomes a popular feature, I envision a lot of questions coming my way. But if it's not a popular feature, then you may just hear me asking you over and over again, please ask me a question. But ask me anything, because the idea is questions are a superpower. You get the right question, you can do profound things in the universe. That's my firm belief. So I want good questions, and the more questions I have, the broader my perspective becomes. So help me out with that. Help others out with that. Ask your questions in the comments. If you're not on YouTube and you don't want to be on YouTube, if you don't want to deal with that, you can ask me those questions by going to kevintumlinson.com/contact. You can also leave feedback on the show. Tell me things that you like, that you don't like, that you wish you could see more of or wish you could see less of. I may or may not care what you suggest. I'll always care what you suggest, but I may not take that advice and run with it, because sometimes I'm just doing things because it's authentic to me and the way I think and operate and want to move in the world. So you can always count on that with me, at least. I'm always going to come at you as who I am. My wife said something really interesting to some new friends that we met. She told me, she relayed this to me, but she said she was talking to one of our new friends, and I came up, their husbands came up, and the friend had said something that prompted this, but my wife told her, that's the thing about Kevin, is you're getting Kevin, no matter how he comes to you. He says he's just Kevin. And if he's on a podcast, if he's writing a book, if he's talking to you in person, if he's talking to you from a stage, you're just getting Kevin. I'm the same no matter where I am, for better or worse. So anyway, if you like just getting Kevin, then you're in the right place. So thank you. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever it's found. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Michael Evans. Try out Ream. Try out Michael's books. Try out my books. I would like for you to buy my books, please. And otherwise, I hope you have a blessed day. God bless all of you. And as we go into the next week, my prayer for you is that you do experience something that is positive, that fills your life with love, and it allows you to carry that love on into the rest of the world. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Wordslinger.